You are listening to Nakedly Examined Music, a podcast about songs and songwriters. My name is Mark Lintonmeyer. My guest for episode 238 is Eric Anderson. He was a major figure in the Greenwich Village folk scene in New York City in the 60s. You're right now hearing his biggest hit, Violets of Dawn, from Bout Changes and Things, his second album from 1966. He has just released his 22nd solo album, Dance of Love and Death. Going to discuss the song Don't It Make You Want to Sing the Blues from that album, then look back to Rain Falls Down in Amsterdam from Memory of the Future, 1998, then look back to Six Senses of Darkness from Ghosts Upon the Road, 1989, and we'll conclude by Time Run Like a Freight Train, the version from Stages the Lost album recorded in 1973. Eric's early songs have been covered by Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash, John Denver, Judy Collins, Ricky Nelson, a number of others, and in addition to those solo albums, he's released two albums with Danko Fjeld Andersen with Rick Danko from The Band. And he's also released at least seven live albums, and he also co-wrote at least one song for The Grateful Dead. More information at ericanderson.com. It's Anderson, S-E-N. For more about this podcast, see nakedlyexaminedmusic.com or support the effort at patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic for ad-free episodes and access to my detailed episode notes that break down the songs, give you the lyrics, etc. I will play a little bit of Violets of Dawn to warm people up. I guess one little question about your older stuff before we get to the new things. I noticed that immediately after that album, Bout Changes and Things, you redid it. Bout Changes and Things, take two. But yet, it's the original version. That's the one that has millions of downloads. And it seems to be the one that have made it on all the compilations. What was going on there in terms of, like, I need to redo my whole album with, I guess, a slightly higher budget? Or...
The main reason is we did it for Europe, and it ended up coming out to both places. They re-released it in the States, but it was for a European and Japanese release. We had done a concert at Town Hall. We liked it, so we decided we were going to go in and, well, we'll make a version for Europe. And so we did, and it was about Changes Take Two, and the record company decided to put it out. It was their idea, not mine, and I had no control over it.
Okay. I guess I asked because I'm trying to get a handle on, as a, I don't want to say folk singer, because I know from other interviews you don't consider yourself solely a folk singer, but as somebody who, the focus is what you can do by yourself. It is a concrete chunk of usually pretty extensive lyrics with a story. And so, you know, you have several of these songs, including the one we're about to talk about, Don't It Make You Want to Sing the Blues, where there are multiple versions out there. I guess this, you know, one on the new album, Dance of Love and Death, is the definitive version, but you had previous live versions released, one way back in 2007. So I'm just wondering, like, do you even care so much about what happens in any particular arrangement as long as somebody's not messing it up? Like, are you telling the guitarist, you know, it seems like you're not, just based on the variety of things that people are doing to accompany you in these different versions, it seems you're not telling them what to do. It's just like, this is the song, what you do, and how it gets decorated is sort of a secondary thing. Does that seem accurate?
Whatever the listener thinks. I mean, I just we do different versions in different places, and maybe less is more, maybe more is more. So, you know, people, if they have different versions to hear and they like one over the other, I guess that's pretty much for them to decide. I don't really think about that.
Well, let's get into the specifics. So yes, this new version, Don't It Make You Want to Sing the Blues, Dance of Love and Death, 2025. Per your press release, this is the first album of original material you'd put out in quite a bit of time. It's a double album. It's a massive thing. Why this album? Why now?
Well, that's an album that was a collection. You know, the things were collected over the years.
Oh, okay.
And it was all done in New York, and it's a compendium, and it ended up being more than one album, so we 17 songs. So it's kind of a love song album, and it all seemed to fit in this particular album. I don't have the set list in front of me. I probably should when I do interviews with people. But there's other kinds of things, too, you know, like about the environment.
Yes, the crime scene song. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it has a variety of different takes, different times, and you write them, and then you get an opportunity to record them. I live in Europe, and so sometimes I come to New York, and when I came to New York, I would record them. And so it's just a collection of time, actually, with lyrics and music.
All right. Well, let's hear the song. Thank you.
Didn't mean to fail you, didn't show enough respect. I was crazy, what did you expect? Nothing here is perfect, something isn't right. But I'm tired, I got no strength to fight. Don't it make you want to sing the blues? It feels like a river's washed away your walking shoes. It feels like a river's washed away your walking shoes. When you just don't feel like living, something inside says you do. Crying like a river full of blue. You wanted some affection, I must have been a fool. I saw you freezing while I was being cool. Love can be a habit, affection's like a drug. When you need it and you just can't get enough. Don't it make you want to sing the blues? It feels like a river's washed away your walking shoes. Feels like a river's washed away your walking shoes. Just don't feel like living, something inside says you do. You're crying like a river full of blue. I told you to be honest, you couldn't play it straight. I could not believe you turn and walk away. When it started, it changes every day. Ain't it funny how the feeling slipped away? Don't it make you want to sing the blues? It feels like a river's washed away your walking shoes. It feels like a river's washed away your walking shoes. When you just don't feel like living, something inside says you do. Crying like a river full of blue. When you're sinking and you're floating, will the water pull you through? Crying like a river full of blues.
So yeah, I noticed this was you played this a little faster than on the Blue Rain live version. It's got the strings in there again, like. Were you working with a producer? Did you decide, hey, I want strings on this version? Like, how does a version like this come about?
I don't know. I don't remember half this stuff.
Okay. You've said in other interviews that you don't even like listening to your past recordings. I mean, is that just like the super past recordings or even what you did last year? You just want to, you know, whatever's not in the set list tomorrow is not top of mind for you.
Well, I like to sing them live, some of them, but I don't listen to the albums once I do it because I've heard it so many times in the studio. So, I mean, I probably should because sometimes you're pleasantly surprised. But once I record them, I don't listen to them because, you know, if you work so many hours song by song by song, sometimes you get lucky and you can do things. A lot of things can be done in one take. I mean, I don't know who the people you talk to, other recording artists, I don't know how it is for them, but for me, sometimes you get one take, and other times, you know, it takes an hour or something like that, and you do two or three. But I generally don't like to do more than two takes. But listening to the albums, no, I very rarely do that.
But I probably should, and you probably got a point that I'm missing here.
Do you recall with this song or with others on this album, were you playing them live by yourself and then the producer came in overdub stuff, or was the bass player and the drummer there with you, you know, your live band as it was in New York, such as it is in New York, was doing this with you? When you say, I'm only doing two takes, is it two takes for the band or two takes for you?
Whoever's around at this time, who's ever at the scene, you know, who's in, whoever's around the room, we're recorded, who's ever there. And then, you know, that's the version we use.
So it sounds like this song might have even been recorded way back close to the time of that live album, 2007.
So things were recorded at different periods, and then they we collected them. Some things were recorded new in New York, but most of the stuff was all done in New York. I think everything was done in New York when I was there, but at different times. I think it's over like 11 years.
Okay. So do you remember with most of those sessions, was it just, we're just capturing Eric, and then maybe the producer is going to do something to finish it off? Or was it you and your band?
That never usually happened. Whatever was happening then at the time usually was the same as what you hear.
Okay.
I don't recall a lot of people overdubbing stuff or doing things behind my back.
This one has, you know, the pretty prominent strings, which on the live versions, you know, it's not so prominent strings, but the rhythm section is much higher. Like on this one, the drums are so small. Like, I don't even know if maybe it was not a kit player. Maybe it's the guy that's I've seen in your live gigs behind you who's doing the sort of fake kit where he's tapping cymbals with his fingers and stuff. I'm not sure. Just listening to it, what we're hearing here. And you're going to tell me you don't remember. So that...
I mean, it's important. I mean, I'll try,
it's not vital. I'm just trying to get at what your method is here and what is important to you when you're putting these things together. Well, let's talk about the song itself then instead of the circumstances of recording it.
Yeah, whatever's happening in the studio, I just go into the song. You know, you kind of caught me here with my pants down because I haven't really thought about this. I haven't looked at the material and thought about, like, where was I when and the circumstances. So I've been pretty far away from all this for quite a long time.
That's okay. Well, let's talk about the song, which is still live, right? It is still something that is living in your current sets.
Well, I haven't done shows in 3 years.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to the States doing shows in September. So I'm picking things that I'm working on the stuff now, actually, you know, the rehearsing stuff.
Well, I was attracted to this. You know, it's the newest iteration of your longstanding piano ballads in the style of the band or something, you know. So I guess one thing that it's a song about the blues. You're talking about the river full of blues, but it's not a blues song. Like, you know, I've seen you do like Just Your Fool, like straight up actual blues songs, which are not depressing, which are not like, you're not crying to those songs. Like it's this kind of piano wailing kind of thing that is more emotive. I don't know. What is your relationship to the blues?
It depends what you like, but there's a version if you like that, that's good, you're the best. I don't know, people have to decide for themselves. I remember Towns saying once, Towns Van Zandt, somebody said, well, you know, man, Towns, all your songs are so sad. And he said, well, no, that's not true. Actually, some are hopeless.
Well, I really like that when you just don't feel like living, something inside says you do. And in fact, that sounds sort of the fact that you resolve the chord, like you'll go back to the tonics as you do. It sounds like the chorus is done. Oh, now we're going to throw the tag onto that. Yeah. Any thought about just that sentiment, that this is not a hopeless song?
Well, basically, you know, I feel the songs have already been written or just sort of floating around the air, and they tap you on the shoulder and they say, Anderson, here, you get your pen out. Here's the song. And you write it down. And sometimes if you didn't write it, somebody else would have gotten it. And then, of course, then once you get the thing down, you might make some changes, but I generally don't make too many changes. When I go in the studio, I just play, I record with whoever's in the round in the neighborhood or who's there. So it's a very simple procedure in terms of both the writing and the recording, you know.
Well, and that's a good formula for releasing a lot of albums, right? Right, not getting hung up and like trying to perfect something with a live band for a year and then like get some ultimate version. Like there's no ultimate version. It's just like this is...
There always has to be a flaw. You can't worry about the flaws or things like that. You know, I only do one or two takes for each song when I record. I don't do more.
And was this Inga? Was this your significant other singing with you, I believe, on this?
Sometimes she sings live. I mean, there were some things, you know, she'd overdubbed some of her parts. Mm-hmm. I was there in the studio because when she came to New York, we did that. It is true. We did overdub some stuff with her.
The chorus of this is very sort of general. And of course, you've written a lot about rivers and blues and blue rain.
But the verses here are very specific. I mean, was this just imagined, or was there some specific, you know, 40-year-old relationship that you had in mind and that you were trying to atone for or something with this? Like, do you know where the verses even came from on this song?
It sounds like I'm a therapist.
I'm just trying to get at where... Are you reporting, like, we're going to talk later about the Six Senses of Darkness, which I found something online where you describe what that song was, where it was specifically like, oh, here's the experience I had trying to go to sleep last night. So I'm asking with this song, is this just entirely just imagined and you're writing about sadness and coming up with a situation, or was, do you recall, was this like based on something specific? Is this a message to somebody? So it's didn't mean to fail you, didn't show enough respect, nothing here is perfect, something isn't right.
Yeah, it was sort of a depiction of the moment, you know, that was an older song, so mm-hmm. It sort of depicted a situation that was happening then, and I'm no longer in that situation, so these are just documents. These songs are basically documents, and it just comes through here, and you're just the medium, you know, you're just the one that writes it down. A lot of things you don't even know what it's about. When you're writing, I think the fun part is that it's an exploration. It's like a little riverboat up the Nile or, you know, up the Amazon or something. The destination is not as important as sort of what you see along the way. So when I'm writing, I'm not a craftsman by any sense of the term. You know, the stuff just goes through me and I write it down. And, you know, I make some adjustments and stuff, but it's interesting. You don't always know what you're talking about. You know, things just come through you and you get it's a feeling. And so you're documenting some kind of feeling. And I don't really look at these things this way. It's interesting because I don't, you know, it just kind of comes from the inside, goes into the outside, and then you move on. And of course, you leave a trail and you have a song and it's nice. I mean, I can say this in terms of autobiography or when I'm performing, it is kind of fun sometimes to sing Violets of Dawn or to sing some of the songs that are on the show, because you can kind of, how can I put it, you kind of revisualize the day or the time. You kind of get it's a revisit. It's kind of like a diary of some kind. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I can sing Violets, and when I'm singing, I can think of the streets and what was going on. You don't really relive the thing, but you get a chance to sort of revisualize the neighborhood of from whence the song was written, you know, back when. So, and that way, it's kind of a beautiful thing because it's a story.
Well, are you recontextualizing? Like, if I sing a song that I wrote 30 years ago in a relationship, then I'm not necessarily... Like sometimes I generalize it in my, you know, no, I'm writing about myself. I'm not writing about, you know, even if it was at the time a message to this girl in this circumstance, like that's irrelevant. I don't have to, the fact that I have no relation to that person anymore doesn't matter because you bring it up to date in some way.
Yeah. I mean, it's the memory, the circumstance or the feeling of the situation at the time.
At some point, my wife forbid me from, like, if we have a fight, don't just like write a song and play it for me. That is nothing. So it sounds like I'm apologizing in this song for this, but you wouldn't actually show it to this person at the time, like as a relationship tool, would you? You say, it sounds like this is just sort of your diary, not something that you would hear. This is the only way I have to express myself. Listen to this song. Is that a kind of thing that you would do back in the day?
No.
No. You're not that... I was going to say not that self-indulgent, but I guess that's probably not the word, because it is actually trying to relate to another person. You're being more self-indulgent that, no, this is just my personal recollections. It doesn't. So I guess in that case, it doesn't matter if you're pulling some of the inspiration from the specific situation. But then if I was saying this to a person, look, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention to your emotional needs. And then I followed up, hey, don't it make you want to sing the blues? Like, well, that's not a thing you would say to a person. That's a self-contained, you know, idiom that you use in songs.
That's an accurate description.
Let's stop and do some ads. This episode is brought to you by Square. Your favorite neighborhood spots run on Square. There are certain businesses that make the neighborhood. When I was growing up in Northbrook, Illinois, there was a place called Little Louie's that we would go and get greasy fries. And right next door, some place whose name I don't remember, where I'd go and buy my Dragon magazines. Yeah, I was that kind of kid. So some of these neighborhood businesses are mom and pop chains. Some are beloved national or regional chains that are rooted in the neighborhood. In any case, these are the places that set the vibe for the neighborhood. They are like an extension of your home. When these neighborhood businesses thrive, the whole neighborhood thrives. Now, Square is a proud partner of more than 4 million neighborhood businesses around the world.
when they show up in a community, it can mean big business for these local business owners, helping with, for instance, the most efficient, up-to-date ways of accepting payments. They've got stuff related to business management, banking, team management, customer engagement. So go support your favorite neighborhood spot. See what Square has been up to in your neck of the woods. And if you have extra time, check out square.com/go/NEM. Square. See you in the neighborhood. Any thought about, I know you just say you just pluck these out of the air. Are there versions of this that have three extra verses? Some of your songs get rather long, you say.
There are songs that had more to it, and I couldn't use them all. So you have to kind of draw the line. And
well, especially something this dramatic, it's only going to be heart-wrenching. You know, if you do the seventh time through the chorus, it's probably not going to be as heart-wrenching.
I know there are songs that I have more writing to it, but I didn't use it all because as you point out, it's right. It gets too long and it gets depends. So you have to kind of wean it down, you know, pare it down to kind of a performance or recording version.
Well, let's get the second song out there because I think this might really feed well into this discussion. Rain Falls Down in Amsterdam. The version I will insert here is From Memory of the Future, 1999, the initial version. Again, you've done this more recently. It seems like this is one of your favorite live tunes, right? At least it starts off the set in two different discs of your Woodstock Under the Stars album.
I don't remember, but I agree.
Are you picking the order of these like on the albums or?
Whatever is happening at the moment. I don't even have all my albums. So, I mean, I have the last recent ones, but I don't have all my own albums.
Can you give us a few introductory words about, before we hear it, Rain Falls Down in Amsterdam? Obviously, very straightforwardly political song, but it seems to start, you know, that you're describing the rainfall. And now we're going to talk about history. And again, it's a longer song, 6+ minutes. Do you want to say a couple of words before we hear it in full?
Well, I think I was doing some shows with Towns Van Zandt and Guy Clark in the Netherlands. After a show we did, I think Towns went gambling and Guy was looking for drugs. And I just took a walk to the station and it was raining out. And so the first line came, the rain falls down in Amsterdam. And what I was thinking about, it was right after the wall had fallen, you know, the Berlin Wall and a lot of the walls along Eastern and Western Europe. So it was a big deal. And people, hey, man, it's going to be freedom and, you know, hallelujah, the walls are down and it's going to be a new world of, but what happened? And this is what I was thinking about, what I thought was really going to happen and did, was that beneath the rocks of the rubble of these fallen walls and regimes, out crept all this nationalism, you know, the neo-Nazis, there was all these things, self-interest groups that had been repressed by communist regimes, for example. So when the walls fell and people were supposedly free, and democracy and the whole world was going to be beautiful, it didn't turn out that way, it did it. So I guess the rise of the neo-Nazi thing, I saw it back in 1990, 91, and I wrote a song about it. As we can see, if you look around, it's all come true.
Falls down in Amsterdam, the streets are wet and black. Midnight's like November by the glow of a cigarette. The girls on hash in Station Square looking stupid from the drugs. When Marlena heard the boots march, there were reasons to be dumb. Shiny helmets in the shadows, those trains that left at night. Those hiding in the cellars, those eyes afraid of light. Something neath the borders poured poison in the well. Ah, the creature has uncoiled and is crawling up from hell. Here comes 1914, 1932. Those cattle cars and yellow stars, it's right back to the roots. It's moving in the open with a snarl and a growl. The cages have been broken and the beast is on the prowl.
firebomb those houses, burn those refugees, be the crowd and do your work, applauding silently. Round up all the gypsies and go sell them on the trains. Can't you smell the smoke now, drifting through the rain? Jews, better draw your curtains, you better lock your doors up tight. They're snarling up in Rostock in the beer hall belly nights. The Fourth Reich's coming, baby, they're writing out the page. In Rome, Berlin, and Stockholm, yeah, the beast has left the cage. Here comes 1932, here comes deja vu. Those cattle cars and yellow stars, was there someone that you knew? It's right there in the open, something smelling bad. All the cages have been broken, and the beast is a running mad. Those canals and cozy houses, those reflections in the lights, you can almost feel it moving, the monster in the night. It's licking with its yellow eyes, it's out to settle scores. In the dim medieval distance, feel it breathing down your pores. In Salt Lake and in Rio, yeah, the beast can smell the flames. It's a fax and hate out in Marseille, typing out your name. You can hear the windows shatter as the time is drawing near. The crystal knots come to town. Welcome back to the house of mirrors. Fire and the armbands and the iron arm salutes, pointing to the scapegoats. Is it me or was it you? It's right there in the open, don't just stand a hoping. The leashes have been broken and the dogs are on the loose. Now I have been here thinking how lucky I have been. I never touched the barbed wire, never saw the monkey grin. No rifle ever smashed my face, no bare electric shock. But I'll confess of all I know, who I am and who I'm not. To see retired killers is to see the lion yawn. The skinheads do that dirty work for the cloak and dagger pawns. The dark eyes will be waiting there when the borders they are crossed. So keep your filthy swastikas and shove your iron cross. Here comes 1914, 1932. Those cattle cars and yellow stars, it's right back to the roots. It's out there in the open, it's crawling on the move. The cages have been broken, and the beast is on the loose. Can't you smell the blood now? Can't you smell the truth? Oh, the rain falls down in Amsterdam. The rain falls down in Amsterdam. Oh, the rain falls down in Amsterdam. Yeah, the rain falls down in Amsterdam.
Okay, so even though this was on a 1999 album, you're saying you wrote this quite a bit earlier, closer to 91, when the actual fall.
I did.
It seems like it applies ever more accurately to current circumstances. That's one of the themes in the song, is this deja vu of the, yes, we're going to have...
But I don't really write political songs. It's not my...
Well, I mean... So is this not a political song for you, that this is more your own frustration at observing this rather than trying to like clean up the world, make things better, you know, it's some sort of activism?
I think it's a description, depiction of something arising, a kind of threat to people. I mean, it's to do with, I don't know how political it is, but it has to do with people to want to be free and not be under repressive regimes and stuff.
You've been through one diet after another, maybe for years. You've counted calories, pushed through workouts, cut carbs, and still the weight came back. It's exhausting. You've been told it's about willpower, but really, it's about science. With Voy's weight loss program, we combine medication with expert support to help you reach your goals. We don't believe in one-size-fits-all solutions. Voy's medication is personalized based on what's right for you. You'll have a full care team behind you, from Voy's clinicians checking in on you to a personal coach keeping you motivated. And with the Voy app, your team is always just a tap away, anytime, anywhere. Join over 100,000 people across the UK already seeing results with Voy at joinvoy.com/podcast. Unsure if it's right for you? Check your eligibility today at joinvoy.com/podcast. Treatments will only be prescribed if deemed appropriate.
It's like an anti-Nazi.
Well, and some good history lessons. I didn't remember what Kristallnacht referred to. So I was looking at the Night of Broken Glass, the particular pogroms.
Yeah, these kinds of things. So somebody said, you know, if you don't learn your, expression, if you don't learn your history, you're doomed to repeat it or something. You've heard that expression.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't know your history or learn your history, you're doomed to repeat it. Because even though things happen in the world, time goes on, new generations are born, and they have no idea. They never went through this stuff. So it's like starting all over again. They can fall into the same trap as the people who went through the period of the Nazi period, or, you know, the Soviet Union, or, you know, people had to live under those circumstances. If you said the wrong thing, you'd end up in the clinker.
You mentioned, like, in Salt Lake City and Rio. So, like, was there something specific in Salt Lake City in the news? Was that, I can't remember what was going on in 1991 exactly.
You mentioned any city at all. It's happening everywhere.
So that was not a particular reference to the news.
You know, you pick up some cities, yeah.
Do you change it when you're touring to talk about the city that you happen to be in?
I really don't think about that stuff.
Well, structurally, this is interesting because, you know, it's mostly verse, chorus, but then after the first verse, you're sort of like, no, one verse length is not enough. I'm going to have a second half of the verse. The Jews better draw your curtains. You better lock your door up tight, where you get sort of more intense. So you could have like a double length verse before it gives you a little bit of release with the chorus.
Well, Sam, yeah, you're a songwriter, so I guess you notice and see things that, I mean, I don't think twice about it. I just sort of, you know, as you know, in your own stuff, you know, just the pen, you know, you just follow the pen and things come out.
Yeah, it seems like maybe as a more literary writer, that it's not about, for the most part, get to the hook. Like, I was initially retracted. We're going to get to one of your 80s songs in a minute here off that album, I Will Try. And then I read online, oh, that was a co-write with somebody. And I feel like, oh, that was an exception where you had a thing that was actually repeated that was like the hook. Whereas this seems more typical. Here comes 1914, 1932. You know, you have elements in the chorus that repeat, but it's not like repeating the same chorus three times. It's not like, you know, a regular pop song.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess I don't really have any comment on it exactly. You know, I don't know what the...
I mean, is that just part of your taste? Like, if you, as what you're a fan of, if you hear something that has like a catchy chorus that repeats over and over, does that strike you as cheesy? Or that's just like, that's just not what you happen to do?
I don't know. I don't think about it. I mean, whatever I keep, whatever's in the song in the end is pretty much the way I want it. So I don't look at things that way.
So I saw this version has Jonas Fjeld doing baritone guitar. That is just it's a duet with you and then him.
Yeah.
A pretty active part. Sometimes he's doing the dun, dun, dun. Like he's being a little country bassist there.
He's great. The guitar is a great guitar, baritone. So people should use it more. It's really
Yeah, especially to accompany an acoustic like that. It's really versatile.
It was just him and me, I think, on that.
Yeah, yeah. So again, it sounds like you just play it through twice and have, hey, you want us to do something? Or had you guys played together live before this song? Mm-hmm. Do you recall? Or was he just kind of winging this more or less on these two takes or whatever it was?
You sit down, record the song, and then he just played the guitar, and that was it. You know, one or two takes. There's no, it's not really a much of a mysterious process. You're just documenting something, and you do it, and then that's it. And I guess I re-recorded it, right, somewhere.
Well, you did a couple live versions. I didn't know if there was another studio recording. Is this?
No, I think that's the only studio recording I have.
Yeah, well, and I noticed that you have a guitarist playing with you on the live version, but he's doing totally different parts. So it's obviously, That's not the song. That's just like the Geist of that day.
Yeah.
Let's look at one that was a little more arranged, and maybe it's just because you were working with a producer that arranged the crap out of it for you, but this Ghosts Upon the Road, 1989, maybe because my age, that's sort of like when I was graduating from high school, sort of when I have the best grasp of what pop music was about. And the fact there's some synth on it, but it's not 80s. It's not even like your 1984 album that's all splashed with reverb and, you know, maybe a little too 80s. This I really like this overall style on this. Do you recall anything about this song? Is this one that you've even thought of since 1989? Six Senses of Darkness.
I liked it, and we just got lucky with the recording. It and it had the atmosphere was captured, I think, in the recording, and went along with the lyrics. I don't have them in front of me right now, but it seems so long ago. It's kind of in the mists of time. But I do remember I was in New York, living in New York, and I had an apartment. And as you said, I just sort of looked out the window, look at the colors outside of this very small window into an alley, and the colors kind of, like Violets of Dawn, you know, just kind of dictated the mood of the song. Sometimes these songs are like mysteries, even to me. You know, they exist, they write themselves, and you don't really know. It's just that they're like feelings with sound and words, you know.
Yeah. Amsterdam seems like a treatise. This is just like really like a dream journal kind of thing, you know, that you're... Yeah. Well, let's hear it.
Couldn't sleep last night, peace wouldn't come. Alone and awake all the night, like in a dream when you're trying to run. Out in the alley, I didn't know where. Something that disturbed the silence. Somebody was scared. Six senses of darkness, six senses of night, six senses of silence, six senses of light. I heard someone breathing, afraid of themselves. What they were feeling, but I couldn't help. Out in the alley, I didn't know where. Moving in closer, like a wound in the air. Six senses of darkness, six senses of night, six senses of silence and shadow, six senses of sight. Something was wrong and I could feel it. Something was hurt but I couldn't see it. Something came down by the forces of darkness. Didn't utter a sound. Cool light of the morning came in through the pane. Steeple bell telling the time. soft in the rain. Out in the alley, it was quiet and dark. Something was bruised by the darkness, like a noise in my heart. Six senses of darkness, six senses of night, six senses of silence, six senses of light, six senses of darkness, six senses of night, six senses of silence and madness deep in your mind.
The song, though. I mean, I like it.
Yeah, the guitar part in particular really attracted me. We haven't talked about your guitar style. I mean, you're generally a finger-picking guy and can really fill space so by yourself. You don't necessarily need other instruments that you're really filling up that space. Yeah. This seems like a pretty exceptional one, this very articulated part. I mean, do you remember, like, is this...
Boy, I tell you, I gotta re-listen to some of these things because that I don't really listen to them.
I really like it. It's very mysterious and sort of suspended, you know, interesting chord choice. And do you recall anything about the production of this album? Because you do have, there's like a triangle. Like, there's all these little bells and whistles, sometimes literal.
Well, I'll tell you, the one to talk to would be Steve Addavo because he remembers all this stuff.
Uh-huh. Was he the producer on the set or he just was the guitarist?
No, Steve produced the Ghost Upon the Road. Mm-hmm. He was the producer. That album kind of brought me out of the darkness again, you know, after... Because I'd made some albums in the 80s that I tried stuff out. Well, they weren't very good. And I'd lived in Europe and I didn't like them. So I think Ghost Upon the Road got closer to the bone of what I'm about.
Yeah, yeah. Can you say a little more about that? So a label picked this up, but was not interested in your 1984 or your 1980 album. Is that what happened in terms of the business side of things? Like, you released those later as like your exiled period. Because I guess you weren't on a major label during that or something.
Yeah.
But now you're saying that you didn't even like those albums.
Oh, I mean, there were things on it that I liked. And, you know, I wish I had the albums and I could look at the titles because it seems like a thousand years ago. So I don't have much recollection of them.
You have to do web research on yourself, just like the rest of us.
I think you know more about it than I do. I'd have to actually do web research on this stuff. But I mean, basically, you know, you have to edit the songs to get it down to like a...
Yeah.
A manageable length, and sometimes you get lucky, some are good, sometimes. But could you do me a favor? Could you get me my phone? Could you bring it to me? Because I'm going to look on Spotify to see what some of the titles are. Because I don't.
I've got it pulled up here. Because it actually they're not released separately. Midnight Sun is the 1980. Tight in the Night is 1984. Istanbul soundtrack I could not find anywhere.
I mean, they had good songs. I mean, you know, but in terms of.
Yeah, well, in particular, I actually like the 1980 album quite a bit. Again, the 1984 album has a bit too much. It's just 80s. You know, everybody's album from 1984, 1986 is probably a little synth heavy and over reverbed and whatever. But yeah, this one, there is like a persistent synth part that comes back. Well, and this seemed to be, right, you said it's sort of your voyage back, and this is right before you started doing the Rick Danko, Jonas Fjeld.
Yeah. I think it was Jonas and me worked on this album. He was on it. That's where I met Jonas, actually.
Mm.
Yeah, I did a lot of this with Steve Addavo. We did this in New York at his studio. I was reminded, you know, but actually, you know, the writing that I do, most of it's just instinctive writing. It's not technical or rational. I'm not a craftsman or I'm not a... I mean, lately I've been trying to put in some bridges into the songs because I kind of would do verse, chorus, and move on to the next one. So I don't, And I'm not really technical.
This one has a nice bridge. The something was wrong and I couldn't feel it. Something was hurt, but I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Something came down out of the forces of darkness and didn't utter a sound.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sort of some sort of emergence of something a little more definite out of the dreaminess. Because the rest of it is like, I'm hovering on the edge of sleep,
yeah,
describing things that maybe you're outside or maybe you're in my mind. And there's like rain, steeple bell telling the time, soft in the rain, and then an actual rain stick comes in, which is a nice, fun little studio thing to do. You know, you're not going to bring a rain stick to your concert to have somebody, or do you? When you do Blu-ray, you don't have a giant rain stick on stage.
I should do that. That's a good idea. I'll get one. I'm going to order one on Amazon.
Yeah, and this has a lot of wood block.
I'll buy a wood block and a, what is it, a rain machine that you can do.
And an actual fade on this song, which seems, you know, rare. If your prototypical thing is like a live performance that you happen to be capturing, then to have the song actually fade, you know, well, that's a studio trick.
I don't know. Six Sense of Dark, was that a live performance?
No, it does not sound. I mean, I don't know. You tell me, but it certainly doesn't sound like.
I think they were all in the studio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You've been through one diet after another, maybe for years. You've counted calories, pushed through workouts, cut carbs, and still the weight came back. It's exhausting. You've been told it's about willpower, but really, it's about science. With Voy's weight loss program, we combine medication with expert support to help you reach your goals. We don't believe in one-size-fits-all solutions. Voy's medication is personalized based on what's right for you. You'll have a full care team behind you, from Voy's clinicians checking in on you to a personal coach keeping you motivated. And with the Voy app, your team is always just a tap away, anytime, anywhere. Join over 100,000 people across the UK already seeing results with Voy at joinvoy.com/podcast. Unsure if it's right for you? Check your eligibility today at joinvoy.com/podcast. Treatments will only be prescribed if deemed appropriate.
You want to say a little more about just this reemergence that you were in the heart of the folk scene and then you seem to change actually very well with the time. Like now it's not like I was just reading about Phil Oakes, like, oh, he couldn't get out of the protest song thing, but you weren't in the protest song thing. You were just in the singer-songwriter thing. And so rolling to like a more country sound, a more, you know, something that fit really well with the early 70s seemed like, you know, you were still commercially viable or whatever, but then you had this exile period that, you know, you weren't as happy with, and now you're reemerging at this point. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's in your bio, but like, what was this experience for you?
I wonder if Exile, I don't even know, I don't think that's on, it's not on Spotify.
Oh yeah, it is. Exiles Volume 1 and 2 are, you just, they're, you know, I think they're in the order of like when they were released to Spotify. So, oh yeah, Exiles, so they're listed as 2009. Exiles, The Hidden Years, 1 and 2.
Oh yeah, I see. Oh yeah.
Which is, yeah, a strange way, because it's just basically those two albums, but they're kind of shuffled around. The tracks are shuffled. Again, is this some record company making this choice of like what goes on what, and or is this
no,
you?
No, not really. No, record companies basically left me alone. I never had. They never messed with me in terms of that. You know, that kind of stuff. Some the Exile thing, that's a compendium of stuff that I did with CBS Records in Europe and EMI Records in Europe. These were things from those two labels that I put together, that we put together and did this album, Exile. So it was kind of, it was an independent release. But I thought it was important to get the stuff out, you know, or at least get a, put it in a accessible package where it could, you know, it could be heard. I haven't listened to it in ages. But there's, as I see, there's some really good song, like Girls of Denmark, Girls in Denmark. That was a good song.
Sure.
Have you seen this one, Mark?
Yes, that is on online there. Blue River. Oh, actually the Tokyo one. I'm not sure if that's the same one.
Yeah, this is Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
We had done some work in Tokyo. We had done recorded, and we didn't even know it was recorded. We just sang a couple of shows. One night we did some extra songs. The other night we did some other extra songs. And then a guy in Italy named Renato, this guy Botani, he said, you know, well, I got this little record company, I'm putting out offbeat recordings of things that, rehearsals or, you know, from different artists. And I think quite a few interesting artists have jumped on the bandwagon with him. And he had this idea. He came to my assistant. He said, do you have anything? And I mean, I don't know. I didn't think about it. And then my assistant said, well, there was something when we performed in Tokyo, the 40th anniversary of Blue River. It was just the violin player, Michele Gozic, and Inga, my wife, who's a harmony singer, really finds a harmony singer. Apparently they had sent some wave files of the performances, and they actually had picked of the two nights, somebody made a choice and mixed the thing of an album. And so we looked at this stuff and we could not believe how good it was. We were completely in shock. Like, what? All the singing was beautiful. The playing was beautiful. So the guy put it out in Italy, and it got such an incredible reaction because it's based on Blue River, this well-known album.
Sure.
It was better than the original album in a way. And I kind of agree. The singing, the thing was actually better and stronger than the original recording. So now they're doing CDs and they're doing it all over the world now. So, and we were amazed because we couldn't believe how good it was, how good the sound was, the mix, how good the singing was, and the songs all came out great. Even the ones we only had one crack at it each night, you know, the extra things. So those, you know, check it out sometime because...
That is the most recent thing that is on Spotify beside the new album.
We were amazed, you know, we couldn't believe it.
Well, let me ask you just the last question to get us launched into the final song that we're not going to discuss. We're just briefly introducing it and then it'll play to just... I wanted to have something from the earlier part of your career. And we've been talking about these albums that didn't quite make it or had to be re-released in some other form. But yes, you have an actual lost album. And you wanted that version of, I assume, one of your... I know it's in recent live sets, or at least some other live albums, Time Run Like a Freight Train, to hear the actual original 1973 version?
Yeah, I think it was recorded in 73, yeah, or late 72, yeah. We had started this record and we called it Stages. In fact, we had done the album.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a whole upheaval at Columbia Records where the FBI got involved, the cops, everybody went in the building, raided the building. They went into all the field offices of Columbia Records, CBS, because of payola.
Mm.
Some itchy stuff was going on. And so they went into the guy, my mentor, Clive Davis, the guy who was the president, was my man there. They came into his office, they closed, shut him down, fired him, got rid of him, he got indicted. I mean, it's a whole scene, everything collapsed. And so my album had been finished, it hadn't been released, so the whole thing, because it was one of Clive Davis's projects, it just got out the window. And so years later, when...
In your research, it's like 1991, it says, is when this was actually really, or 1990, something like that.
Yeah, it was. And then years later, a woman named Amy Herod up at Sony, they were looking at a lot of things that had been recorded by Sony Records and never, that got lost through the windstorms and dust of time. Things like Robert Johnson, for example. There's a lot of incredible Bessie Smith. There's a lot. So they started putting out things that they had a long time ago and reissuing things because with the invention and advent of CDs, they were able to do reissues of things. So this lost album came up and everybody wondered, where the hell is it? So finally it was located. They checked all the cities around the world with CBS Records, and they couldn't find it anywhere. And finally, somebody stumbled on the tapes in Nashville, and it was in Nashville where it was recorded. They had to remix a few things, and then they put it out. But it just came out many, many years later. But it was reviewed in like Rolling Stone and places like as a new album, and it got like 4.5 stars. It got... I mean, incredibly great reviews. However, the momentum was lost after the album Blue River because of this event that happened, you know, with, mm-hmm. with the label.
Well, it's interesting to see what you then re-recorded for the next released album, Be True to You, which, you know, with a different label.
Well, they had some of the songs.
Yes, Moonchild River Song, and this one, Time Run Like a Freight Train and maybe a couple others, but you know, you totally re-recorded, and Time Run Like a Freight Train in particular is much more minimalist, I think, on this new version, whereas the version we're about to hear is quite a lot of noodling.
It's okay. I mean, Debbie was one of the harmony singers, and Florence Warner. The original was really beautiful because there was a lot of thought went in, because part of the National Symphony Orchestra came in, and I'm not a big string. It's not a normal thing for me to do that kind of stuff. But well, we have done it, because I'm Be True to You, you're right. The guy, Tom Sellers, he worked for Gamble and Huff, and he did all those, you know, Philadelphia hits, and all those black groups. They came in the Nashville, and it was really great what they did. So that's why I prefer to use that version, because I think it's more interesting.
A lot more going on for such a long song. This is why I put this at the end, because this one is 8.5 minutes. We're sort of getting the variety.
It's a beautiful piece of work. People like classical music people like in Nashville who worked with the orchestra, they were astounded by this song. They thought it was amazing. People are saying things, if this people don't get this, then forget it. The music business is completely fucked.
Well, I mean, it's fun that it's like you've written the same kind of blocks of lyrics that's in Violets of Dawn or any of your other, the Amsterdam, or but that it's delivered so much more slowly. So it's just, you know, such a pretty slow delivery. So yeah, it's going to add up. If, you know, a normal length of song, if you're singing half speed, is going to be 8.5 minutes. Yeah, but it's just it's a beautiful recurring guitar part and the stuff that was put over it.
Well, Greedy Martin played guitar, but it was, you know, mainly emphasizing with the cellos from the orchestra. So, I mean, I think it's a great, that came off great. It's a pity that album didn't come out in time, because it really said something. There was nothing else like it.
Well, it's all laid out now. I don't know how many people, given the length of your catalog, I hadn't really heard anything besides Violets of Dawn and some version of the Boots, you know, probably the John Denver version, Thirsty Boots. And, well, yeah, I guess the Bob Dylan version as well. But to actually then listen through your catalog from first album to I don't know how. It's an experience I would recommend for listeners that have not, or they're not too familiar with you.
Thank you.
Because it's a remarkable progression. And of course, the evolution of your voice is fun in itself. That this voice that we're hearing on Time Run Like a Freight Train, even compared to your 1989 album, it sounds like a different person.
Well, you know, we have to thank Spotify in a way, though. It's a public company in the sense, because Spotify has become the library, the music library of the world. And you can be in Mongolia, you can be in China, you can be in the Antarctica with if you have some kind of satellite, something, to pick up songs. So people who are interested in my stuff, they can go find my name, and then I guess a good list of albums, and they can sort of see what you described, you know, they can experience.
Yes. The downside is, I'm sure that through my listening to every single album, you made 20 cents or something like that. So it's not the best financial situation for artists, but at least for posterity, for your legacy.
What's the alternative?
Right. Yeah. So thanks so much for giving me the extra time. I really appreciate it.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, Mark. And I'll check out your music.
All right. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks.
Bye.
Ciao.
Outside the rain is falling, the doorways are all afield with all whose lives just move so slow, leaving only space to fill. Though the rain is making patterns now on my windowsill, of those who never asked to die and were too afraid to kill. Time run like a freight train. Won't you take me down the line? There's so much I can never say of the ruins left behind. of my pockets, they are empty. There's so much on my mind. Time runs like a freight train and take me down. Pamela was anxious. I kept her waiting long. She asked me for a symphony. I only gave her songs, but I'm weary of these petty wars. I long for perfect sin. When gravity was my lover and silence was my friend, time run like a freight train. Won't you take me down the line? There's so much I can never say of the ruins left behind. If I could, I would explain to you. There's so much on my mind. Time run like a freight train and take me down the line. Lila does not care for chains, preferring wind stone. Her hungry thighs, they sing for me. Her mouth moves like a poem. Yeah, we loved in green. Desire's light, so careful not to bruise all the secrets we so finely spun, knowing neither likes to lose. Time run like a freight train. Won't you take me down the line? So much I can never say of the ruins left behind. All my pockets, they are empty. There's too much on my mind. Time run like a freight train and take me down the line. Gather all your shattered mirrors. I'll take them willingly to the peddlers and the auction men, who will trade them all for dreams. for there's nothing left but mercy now. For you, the one I'm thief. The poet who pawned his mystery in turn for some relief. Like a freight train, won't you take me down the line? There's so much I can never say of the ruins left behind. If I could, I would explain to you. There's so much on my mind. Time run like a freight train and take me down the line. Take me down the line. Take me down.
Thanks so much to Eric. It's a real pleasure to connect with someone in this position regarding rock and folk history. Also, clearly, somewhat of a challenging interview. Longtime listeners may have heard my discussions with James McMurtry or Richie Ramone, two other gentlemen who were perhaps less into the little game that I play on this podcast of let me think hard on the spot about what makes me tick and how it translates into song. So I realized some of this interview was just me making observations myself and him saying, if you say so. But also per usual, I think he opened up a bit more toward the end. And I think he's a plenty talkative person. He's just maybe interested more in other people than himself, which is healthy. And hopefully this was a positive experience for him. I want to recommend that you go to ericanderson.com. Again, that's Anderson with an S-E-N at the end. Or look him up on the various streaming services to dive into this vast and wonderful catalog. I will link to some other versions of these songs, some other key songs, songs relevant to the things we talked about from the blog post associated with this episode at nakedlyexaminedmusic.com. Or you can always go to patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic. And for a very small recurring contribution, you can get all the episodes ad-free and see way more observations that I made about these songs that I didn't feel it was appropriate to bring up in the interview. Hope you're doing well. I have COVID right now, so that's not great. But I'm excited to finally be releasing this episode and that my cough is intermittent enough that I can speak to you now without my throat freaking out too much. So, health permitting, all of you should keep on musicking. Until next time, this is Mark Lintonmeyer signing off.
There's magic in the sleepiness of waking to a childish sound and yawn. Come watch the no colors fade blazing into petal sprays of violets of dawn.